Hikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Hikatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into a book that, well, it seems to have struck a chord with so many people. It tackles something I think we all grapple with: self-sabotage. We're deep diving into Brianna Weist's The Mountain Is You.
Yeah, it's a really compelling book, maybe even a bit confrontational, because it forces you to look at a fundamental truth, one that can be kind of irritating, actually.
Which is?
That the biggest thing holding you back from the life you want, it's probably not your boss or the economy or anything out there. It's usually internal.
It's us. The mountain is us. And that's what the book digs into, that gap, right? That really frustrating gap.
Totally. We've all experienced it.
You consciously want something, maybe it's success or health or peace in a relationship, but then somehow you find yourself doing the exact thing that undermines it.
Like procrastinating on that huge project.
Or eating the junk food you swore off.
Or pushing away someone you care about. It feels almost automatic sometimes.
Exactly. So why do we do that? Why act against our own clear best interests, often knowingly? That's the big question why this tackles.
And her answer is fascinating. She suggests this internal chaos isn't just random dysfunction. It's actually a highly sophisticated pattern.
Sophisticated how?
Designed, she argues, by our subconscious mind to keep us safe. Even if safe means stuck in a pattern we don't like.
Okay, that's a lot to unpack. Before we start climbing this mountain, let's talk about the guide, Brianna Weist. She's become quite a prominent voice, hasn't she?
She really has. Many people first encountered her through her viral articles, often on places like Thought Catalog. She's an author, a writer. Her real talent lies in making these quite complex emotional and philosophical ideas feel incredibly clear.
Yeah, her style is very distinctive. It's not like reading a dry textbook. It's it mixes this almost poetic way of writing with really practical psychology. And there's a real warmth to it, a compassion.
It makes these big ideas feel personal, relatable. Like you're getting advice from a very wise, very insightful friend, maybe.
Definitely. And it's worth pointing out, her authority isn't from being, say, a licensed therapist.
Right. She's more of an exceptional synthesizer. She pulls together ideas from all over psychology, neuroscience, even philosophy, and ancient wisdom.
And she weaves them into this framework for, well, looking inward, for self-understanding.
And the core of her perspective seems to be this interesting balance. You need radical self-accountability. You have to own your internal world.
No blaming allowed.
Right. But crucially, you also need profound self-compassion. Beating yourself up doesn't work either. It's that combination.
That's the starting point, isn't it? You need both to even begin tackling self-sabotage.
Is this foundation, yeah.
Okay, so let's get to the core metaphor. The mountain is you. What exactly does she mean by the mountain?
It represents the sum total of our internal obstacles. All those limiting beliefs we carry, the deep fears, the old emotional wounds that haven't healed, the habits that trip us up. That's the mountain.
So it's everything inside us that we need to confront and climb over.
Exactly. It's about shifting from feeling like a victim of your circumstances to realizing you're the climber. You have agency.
And I think everyone listening can relate to feeling stuck at some point. You see the same negative patterns playing out in work, money, relationships.
Yeah. And you get tired of blaming external stuff.
Right. So if you're at that point ready to look inward, this book is kind of like your map and compass.
And she lays out a clear path. She calls it psychological archaeology, which I love.
Archaeology, like digging things up.
Precisely. Yeah. You don't just slap a Band-Aid on the problem. You excavate its roots. It begins with diagnosis.
Figuring out how you're sabotaging yourself, even in subtle ways.
Then comes deconstruction. This is the why. Why do we do this? Often it links back to unresolved stuff from the past, maybe childhood wounds or core negative beliefs we formed.
And this is where that big insight comes in. Self-sabotage isn't trying to hurt you.
No. It's a defense mechanism. It's trying to keep you safe in your comfort zone, even if that zone is actually pretty uncomfortable. It prefers the familiar pain over unfamiliar potential, you know.
That makes so much sense. So after digging it all up,
then it's reconstruction, building a new foundation. This involves developing emotional intelligence, healing that inner child part of you, and consciously designing who you want to become your future self.
Wow. The goal's pretty ambitious then. reaching the summit of self-mastery.
It really is.
Okay, let's get into the mechanics. Part one and two really focus on the logic behind sabotage. You mentioned this idea of divided intention.
Right. This is key. Self-sabotage happens because, essentially, different parts of you want different things. There's conflict.
Your conscious mind wants the promotion at work.
Yes, your adult self wants that success, the recognition, the money. But maybe your subconscious survival self is terrified.
Terrified of what?
Of the added responsibility, maybe, or the visibility, or the fear of failing after you succeed. So it holds a subconscious commitment to avoiding that perceived threat.
And the self-sabotage, maybe missing deadlines or saying the wrong thing in a meeting, is actually the survival self succeeding at its goal.
Exactly. Its goal is to keep you safe and hidden, according to its old programming.
Hmm.
And this leads to that really powerful reframing she offers. Self-sabotage isn't a pathology. It's not that you're broken.
It's a protective mechanism that's just misguided.
Precisely. Your brain opts for the discomfort it knows, like procrastination over the uncertainty of success, because familiar always feels safer, even if it hurts.
Wow. Thinking about it that way, it does take away some of the shame, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It shifts it from what's wrong with me
yeah.
to, okay, what is my brain trying to protect me from here, and how can I address that need differently?
So if that internal conflict is the engine of sabotage, how do we resolve it? Whittius points towards emotional intelligence, but maybe not how we usually think of it.
Right. We often think EI means controlling emotions, stuffing them down. She says it's the opposite. It's about listening to your emotions because they're giving you valuable data.
Like warning signals.
Exactly. Right. Anxiety isn't just noise. It might be signaling a genuine need to prepare for something. Anger isn't just negativity. It could be telling you a boundary has been crossed and needs attention. They're messengers.
And that connects directly to her idea about triggers, doesn't it? That triggers are like a map.
Yes. This is huge. If you have a massive emotional reaction, like sheer panic or intense rage, to a situation that objectively seems pretty minor.
Like a 10 out of 10 reaction to a 2 out of 10 event.
That disproportionate reaction is the clue.
Yeah.
It tells you you're not just reacting to the present moment. You're reacting to something older, an unhealed wound, or a core belief from the past that was a 10-10 situation back then.
So the trigger isn't the enemy. It's pointing you right to the source of the pain. Like a belief of, I'm not good enough, or I will always be left alone.
Exactly. They're not threats. They're invaluable guides to your inner landscape. They show you where the healing needs to happen.
Okay, so if triggers point to the wounds, that brings us to the idea of healing the inner child. This can sometimes sound a bit cliche in self-help. Why is it so central here?
Because, according to Weist, so many of our adult self-sabotaging behaviors are basically attempts by our adult selves to get emotional needs met that weren't met when we were young.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Maybe as a child, you only felt loved or seen when you achieved something perfectly. So you developed a core belief. My worth depends on being perfect.
Okay.
Then, as an adult, you might subconsciously torpedo a great opportunity like a promotion, because accepting it means accepting the possibility of not being perfect, of failing. And to that inner child part of you, failure feels like annihilation, like losing love.
So the adult sabotage is driven by the child's fear.
Precisely. So the work isn't about blaming your childhood, but about reparenting yourself now.
Reparenting. What does that look like in practice?
It means consciously giving that inner child part of you the safety, validation, and reassurance it didn't get back then. So if you get harsh criticism at work, instead of collapsing into shame, which is the child reaction,
right,
the reparented adult pauses, acknowledges the sting, but then consciously tells themselves, okay, this criticism is about the work, not my fundamental worth. I am safe. I am okay, even if I make mistakes.
You provide the security internally that you were looking for externally.
Exactly. And over time, that conscious reassurance helps dissolve those deep fears fueling the sabotage.
That makes sense. So once you're doing that inner work, addressing the past, the focus shifts forward to building the future self.
Yes, that's part five. Mm. This acknowledges a tough truth.
Yeah.
Real transformation means letting go of who you've been.
We get attached to our old identities, even the limiting ones.
We resist outgrowing ourselves, even if we say we want change.
Absolutely. So WINS emphasizes creating a really clear, vivid picture of the person you want to become, your future self.
Yeah.
Who are they? How do they act? How do they think?
And then you just try to be them. Not just try. You reinforce that new identity through consistent small actions, incremental micro habits, tiny steps that align with that future self.
So it's not about waiting until you feel like that new person.
No. That's the crucial bit. You act your way into a new way of thinking. The actions come first, building momentum and proving to yourself bit by bit that you are becoming that person.
Act your way into a new way of thinking. I like that. That feels really actionable.
It really is. And it leads nicely into the overarching themes of the book. The first big one is that paradigm shift we talked about, self-sabotage as a misguided protector.
Yeah, just understanding that changes everything, doesn't it?
It moves you from self-criticism to self-compassion and curiosity. You start asking, okay, what is this behavior trying to do for me, even if it's doing it badly? Then you can find healthier ways to meet that underlying need.
But that compassion needs to be balanced, right? Which brings us to the next theme.
Radical accountability as the path to freedom. This is the tough love part, maybe. Weiss is clear. Ultimate freedom comes only when you take 100% ownership of your internal world, your reactions, your choices, your beliefs. Stop blaming the past, your parents, the situation.
Acknowledge the past, yes, but don't live there as a victim.
Exactly. Victimhood keeps you stuck. It is a form of self-sabotage. Taking ownership, even when it's hard, is the only way out.
Okay, so own it, but don't get overwhelmed. Which leads to the third theme, offering some relief. Transformation through incremental action.
Yes, she really pushes back against the idea that change has to be this one huge dramatic breakthrough moment.
Like in the movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Real lasting change is usually much quieter. It's about the small, consistent choices you make every single day. Building new neural pathways, essentially. Consistency over intensity.
A 1% improvement daily is better than a giant leap you can't sustain.
Totally. It makes change feel less daunting and more achievable.
And the final theme helps explain why change is often so hard, even when we want it. The familiarity principle.
Ah, yes, the neuroscience bit. Our brains are wired to prioritize predictability. They like what they know, even if what they know is painful.
So we stick with bad habits or limiting beliefs just because they're familiar?
Often, yes.
Hmm.
The brain sees the unknown, even potentially positive unknown, like success or healthy intimacy, as threatening. Known discomfort feels safer than unknown possibility.
That explains so much resistance. So how do you counter that?
You have to deliberately, gradually expose yourself to novel discomfort. Small things. Take a different route home. Start a conversation with someone new. Try a new skill.
Little steps to teach your brain that unfamiliar doesn't automatically mean dangerous.
Exactly. You gently expand your comfort zone piece by piece.
Weist has such a knack for boiling these complex ideas down into really memorable lines, doesn't she?
She really does. Those little reframing statements are incredibly sticky.
Let's share a few. Starting with the absolute core one. The mountain is you. You are not carrying the mountain. The mountain is made up of all the things you have to do, be, think, and feel to get over what you're trying to get over.
Boom. That just perfectly sums it up. The obstacle isn't out there. It's the internal landscape we've built.
And clarifying the nature of the problem, self-sabotage is the presence of a divided will.
Yeah, that takes the moral judgment out of it. It's not that you're bad or weak. It's an internal conflict that needs resolving.
My personal favorite is the one about triggers. Your triggers are a map to your unhealed wounds. They are the heralds of your freedom.
Oh, that's so powerful. It turns something painful into a tool, doesn't it? A guide towards liberation. Beautiful.
And finally, one about the goal, shifting focus from fixing to creating. True healing is not the fixing of the self, but the building of a life you don't need to escape from.
I love that. It's about building forward, creating something positive, rather than just endlessly trying to repair the past. Puts the power back in your hands.
So let's make this really practical. How can someone apply these ideas, say, in their relationships? That's a common area for sabotage.
Definitely. The big shift is when a pattern repeats, like always attracting unavailable partners, stop focusing on blaming them. Ask yourself honestly, what deep fear might this pattern be protecting me from?
Maybe a fear of real intimacy, of being truly seen.
Could be. The pattern, however painful, keeps you safe from that perceived vulnerability. So the application is that inner inquiry, using the trigger as a starting point.
What about at work, dealing with things like imposter syndrome or procrastination?
Procrastination is classic protection. Often it's not laziness, it's fear. Fear of failure, sure, but sometimes fear of success. Fear of the expectations or visibility that comes with it.
But how do you apply the book's wisdom there?
Micro habits. Focus on building that future self-identity. Don't try to tackle the whole terrifying project. Commit to one tiny action, opening the file, writing one paragraph, making one phone call.
And celebrate that small win.
Yes. Each small action reinforces the identity of someone who does follow through, someone who is capable. it builds evidence against the imposter syndrome.
And you mentioned trigger journaling earlier. That sounds like a really concrete tool.
It is. When you get triggered, that big overreaction, take 5 minutes. Write down, what happened? What did I feel, specifically? And then, crucially, what older wound or belief might this be connecting to?
Turning you into a detective of your own psyche.
Exactly. Instead of just being swept away by the emotion, you're analyzing the data it's giving you.
Thinking about the whole book, what was the biggest takeaway or surprise for you?
Honestly, it was the sheer liberation that comes from fully accepting the central idea, that the power is truly internal. It feels heavy at first, this idea that you are the mountain.
Like it's all your fault.
Kind of, but not in a blaming way, more in an empowering way.
Yeah.
If the mountain is you, then the power to climb it, to change it, also resides entirely within you. It shifts you from waiting for the world to change to actively creating your own experience.
Mm-hmm.
That felt profound.
Yeah, I get that. For me, what I really loved, what stuck with me, was the emphasis on integration, not perfection.
Right.
It's not about eradicating your fears or insecurities, becoming some flawless superhuman. It's about acknowledging those parts, understanding what they need, usually safety or validation, and learning to work with them.
Giving that inner child what it needs, like we discussed.
Exactly. Embracing the whole self, shadows and all. Realizing that the you who climbs the mountain includes all those parts. You don't conquer the mountain by destroying parts of yourself. You integrate them into the climber.
Beautifully put. It makes self-mastery feel less like a battle and more like, well, coming home to yourself.
Yeah. A challenging climb, for sure, but one you're inherently equipped for.
A really worthwhile perspective.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.